I'm Mark Bayshore. Welcome back to Current State for Wednesday, the third of the month. Road funding, education spending, and other important budget issues are among the focus of discussions at the state capitol. There were several developments yesterday in education spending. A measure meant to bridge the funding gap between school districts emerged yesterday. And all the while, a focus in the road funding debate continues to be whether the money for a fix can be found among existing revenue or if new revenue is required. Our next guest is at the forefront of these discussions in the Michigan House. We welcome back to Current State Republican House Speaker Kevin Cotter. Welcome back, sir.
Well, good morning, Mark. Great to be back with you.
Also joining me with questions for Speaker Cotter, Michigan Public Radio Network's Capitol Bureau Chief Rick Pluta. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Mark. Good morning, Mr. Speaker.
Good morning, Rick.
It's been speculated that your billion-dollar road funding proposal would get a committee vote today by the House Roads and Economic Development Committee. The committee held its third hearing on the measure yesterday. Do you expect a vote today, and how do you expect it to turn out?
You know, that's my belief at this point, is that the committee will take up those bills, and I expect that they'll be reported, and that will then allow the full House to consider the bills just shortly thereafter.
Mr. Speaker, how much money do you expect to come out of the bills that you're taking up today? That it's a $1.2-1.3 billion challenge. How far will this take you toward that goal?
You know, these bills, as introduced, were just over $1 billion. So right there in that neighborhood, and that seems to be the agreed upon need, is right about 1.2. You know, and I've said for some time now, let's not argue the number. That's not productive. We've spent a lot of time doing that. Let's just make significant investment in the roads. And so I expect that this package will come out somewhere in the neighborhood of where it was introduced, right in the neighborhood of $1 billion, and we'll be open to changes that might increase that.
Well, what's your end game here? That you know, a dedicated source of revenue, and that was a big topic of conversation yesterday, I know, in the Roads and Economic Development Committee. What's the end game as far as any dedicated source of revenue as opposed to tapping the general fund for it?
Well, with what I proposed, it would be dedicated. We would be going to dollars that are general fund dollars today, but then dedicating them. So the ongoing basis, that's one key of this road funding plan, is that to be a true plan, it has to be ongoing, and it has to be protected against inflation. And so these bills would dedicate that, or the term we use is restricted. It would take it off the annual discretion of the legislature to determine appropriations, and it would put it to the roads first. And that's one of the challenges is that, you know, it's been reported that this would not be ongoing, and absolutely it would. This would be, you know, very comparable to a family taking care of needs before wants and putting a mortgage on auto pay. That's what this package of bills would do with our roads, and say we've got to take care of our needs first, wants second.
The ongoing debate here has been about whether existing revenue can get it done or whether additional revenue is needed. Throughout the course of these hearings, have you heard any argument in favor of additional revenue that made you seriously consider that?
You know, I am seriously considering it, and I have heard those arguments, and I heard those arguments and considered them as reasonable arguments even before I introduced this package.
And you're still considering them?
Yes, I am. I am. I have said that, you know, reprioritization has to be a significant part of the plan. I haven't tied a number to what significant is, but that has to be a part of it. But I'm also open to discussions about new revenue being a part of it.
Do you think you're going to come in at the numbers that you want when this heads over to the Senate? Because, of course, the House is part of this, the Senate is part of this, and in the end, the governor who has to sign it needs to be persuaded.
Well, it does, and so I think that this is going to be ongoing. We're going to start. The House is going to start at a point, but we have to be fully aware of the fact that, you know, we're not the sole decision makers here. We have partners in the Senate and our governor, and I believe as long as we're all focused on truly addressing and solving the problem, that it may require all of us to go outside of our comfort zone. But we can get there.
I mean, this is a process question, but do you think that in the end, once you get through with what the House does and then what the Senate does, that this will have to go to a House and Senate conference committee to negotiate the details in the fall?
You know, that's just too far down the road. Okay. I just really can't speak to that at this point. We're waiting. We're having discussions with the Senate to get a feel for where they're at, and that's going to be come more apparent here in the coming days. So it's just too early to predict.
Our guest is Republican House Speaker for the state of Michigan, Kevin Cotter. Speaker Cotter, is the earned income tax credit discussion done as far as you're concerned? You heard a lot about that in the committee here this week, or is that going to be an ongoing discussion?
You know, I think it's going to be an ongoing discussion. I expect that that's going to come out of the committee, and then we'll continue to consider it on the floor. I think it'll be a part of the discussion ongoing.
If a compromise over roads included keeping any of the earned income tax credit, would you be receptive to that?
I'd be open to discussing it. And again, my focus is on addressing the problem. And if there are reasonable changes that can be made that allow that to happen, and this is not just about the House passing a plan so we can say that we did. It's got to get all the way through the process and be signed by the governor to be a true success. And I am saying that I would be open to those discussions if they get us closer to a solution.
On the earned income credit, why is a tax credit that encourages low income, could become no income families to go to work and stay employed? Why is that part of the discussion? What is the relative value of that versus what you're trying to do with roads?
Why is that part of the discussion?
Yeah.
Well, it's part of the discussion because it's $117 million that we're spending in any given year. And there are a lot of things that you could point to and say, why is that part of the solution? The fact of the matter is we have to be open to ideas. And, as this was debated in the committee just recently, as you look at the average credit, what's realized by a family, we're talking about $2.70 a week.
More money will be headed to Michigan school districts under a compromise plan that was hammered out yesterday in a conference committee. And the idea here is to bridge the gap between districts receiving more state money and those getting less. Can you help us understand what's behind this compromise and what you make of this?
Sure. I'll first say I think this is a great budget for education. This is a great budget for K-12 education. This is a great budget for higher education. But as we look at the point that you alluded to as far as, disparity amongst districts, this has been an ongoing challenge as you look at how we fund our school districts and to what level. And when we started, going back 4 years ago, there's been interest in trying to close that gap. So that students aren't funded at different levels based on their zip code. This budget follows something we've done over the last few years that uses what we call a 2X formula. And what that is it says, okay, let's take the amount of the increase, which is significant in this budget, that we're going to increase K-12 by, and it gives a little bit more to the bottom. So we raise the bottom. But in this budget, every district in the state will receive a minimum of $70 per pupil to a maximum of $140 per pupil. And so it does close that gap a little bit.
As I understand it, these categorical payments, as they were called, to districts that created this gap were awarded by meeting best practices. They were meant as an incentive for districts to make constructive changes. Is it fair to say that that approach didn't work? And if so, do you understand why?
I think it's safe to say that it didn't work to the extent to have enough support to continue, if that makes sense. It's something that we tried for a few years. I'm not saying it's a failure, but I'm saying that in an effort to get the support for the budget, we've gone away from that in this budget. Again, I think it's a very good budget for education, but it does get away from that best practice funding. Best practices, it's a good goal, but the implementation sometimes becomes a challenge.
And isn't part of that the fact that the state tried to impose these best practices and the discovery was that school districts are actually have already adopted a lot of them?
It could be that. It could also be, anytime we look at best practices, there's always concern about the goals being moved. And I think to be true best practices, we have to be able to move that to get, the best result. But I think it just presented a challenge that enough people at the end of the day were saying, okay, this is something we're going to move away from.
It just seems to me as well. Could you also say that some school districts are just a whole lot more successful at implementing best practices than other districts, and it just basically ended up widening the gap?
You know, I would just say that there's just such a diversity across our districts as far as whether it's looking at what's worked well in a given district, what changes have been implemented, what haven't. And so, you know, it really is a challenge when we look at funding districts to try to put forward a model that is equitable. And so I think that what we have here is going in a better direction.
Mr. Speaker, one of the things that's left unresolved in this budget is what's going to happen with the Detroit public schools, which are saddled with huge legacy costs, that it's something that you're going to have to tackle one way or the other. Where does where do things stand with the with the state's largest school district?
Yeah, we have a heck of a mess on our hands. We know that much. We know that, Detroit Public Schools, it's beyond upside down right now. Looking certainly financially, I think you could say also as far as the results that we're seeing. And this is a major problem that is becoming front and center. It's something that we have to tackle in some fashion. There's disagreement as to how exactly we do that. So we're going to be working on that. I think that, you know, today with wrapping up the budget process, that's going to take one major item off the legislature's plate, and I think we can move on, be happy with that work product. But then front and center is roads, and we also have Detroit Public Schools. So that's a big issue that's going to be getting a lot of attention that it deserves.
There was an interesting development yesterday. Apparently, some millions of dollars were set aside yesterday in the education budget, but they were not necessarily earmarked for Detroit. Can you help us understand what that set aside was all about?
Yeah, no, I'd like to explain that. We started the process with, as it always starts, with the governor's recommendation for the budget, and that included $75 million for distressed schools. So that's money that could go to schools without naming the schools that face financial distress. And as we worked through this process, what we ultimately compromised on, and any budget is a compromise, was not to set that $75 million aside for distressed schools, but rather to leave $50 million on the balance sheet. And what I mean by that is this money has been set aside to leave the conversation open for assistance to Detroit or any other district facing hardship, but we're not there yet to make that appropriation. And so we have work to do, and it would be, in my opinion, premature to allocate that money, because part of this discussion is also going to be about reforms. It's not just about sending money, but it's how do we make the educational environment better for kids and parents.
Mr. Speaker, one more quick question about prevailing wages. You know, a ballot initiative is probably underway, or I should say a petition initiative is underway. Is there any room for negotiation on whether the House would vote on prevailing wage, which has, you know, a version has already been adopted by the Senate? Should that initiative reach the legislature?
Yeah, no, if it reaches the legislature, I think you could expect a vote. It's the repeal of prevailing wage is something I've been very outspoken on, very much in support of. It's a priority this term. And, I think when the Senate sent their bills over to the House, we heard loud and clear where the governor was at on it.
He's opposed.
It was just a short time, yes, opposed, and it was just a short time later that word of the voter-initiated process was starting up. So I think at this point it's appropriate to hit the pause button and see if the support is there among citizens. And if it is, I think you would expect to see a vote in the House.
We've got 30 seconds left, Speaker Cotter. Can you tell us, are the Quadrant leaders meeting? Are you meeting with Representative Grimal and Mr. Meekoff and the governor?
Yeah, no, we have meetings. As far as the full Quadrant, it's not something that's an ongoing set schedule. But I would hope all would agree that we have good, productive working relationships.
We want to thank Republican House Speaker Kevin Cotter, who's been our special guest here this morning. Lots happening under the Capitol Dome. We also want to thank the Michigan Public Radio Network's Rick Pluta, our Capitol Bureau Chief, for joining us. Speaker Cotter, many thanks.
Gentlemen, thank you.